goodness! You're listening to a special gold logo version of Only the Valiant episode 93! Welcome to another episode. This is Only the Valiant, and as always, I am Sean.
I'm Chiclo.
Salvin, everybody.
All right, and welcome to the show. How are you guys doing on this chilly winter evening?
I am doing magnificent. There is no school tomorrow, so that's great.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it's like one of those pseudo-holidays, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that I don't get off. That's why I call it a pseudo holiday.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I've been staying busy. Good time to be in the business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet it has been busy for you.
Yeah.
All right, well, with this episode, we are going to do something a little bit different than what we have been doing for the last about like 6 months now, I guess.
At least.
Yeah. So for the last like 6 months since the new Valiant has been coming out, we've been really just talking about the new books that have been coming out. And every episode has been, let's just talk about the new books, talk about the new books, talk about the new books. And I think that we're all getting a little feeling like we're in a rut of just it becoming the like Valiant Comics review show. And so I thought, hey, maybe we should do something different. And I threw out some ideas and you guys were like, yeah, sounds good.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about any of the individual new books. There have been good books that have been coming out, so obviously we're not going to be talking about Shadow Man 3 or Bloodshot 7 or Archer and Armstrong 6 in this episode. So if you're looking for a discussion on those, you'll have to come back to a later episode. I'm sure we'll get to them eventually. You know, I have a feeling we're probably, as more books come out, we'll probably talk about them in chunks.
Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about every single book that comes out.
Yeah.
That's a lot of talking.
Yeah.
So we might have to pick chunks or just do like, maybe we're just going to do Shadow Man and Archer Armstrong and then next podcast will be Bloodshot, but we might not do every single book. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of these are pairing off or I guess grouping off in 4 to 6 issue story arcs. We could talk about a story arc when it's done.
Right, right.
Yeah, because
I like this idea.
Yeah, because I'm feeling like, you know, it's basically we're going to just be putting our nose to the grindstone if we try to talk about every single book, you know, especially the way we talk about books, you know. We'll talk about a single book for 45 minutes.
30 minutes talking about how great it was when Arik punched that dude in the face.
Yeah.
With his pan blaster on at the same time.
That was awesome.
That was. That's what we talked about.
It was.
The face exactly. Melter.
Yes, face melter number one.
Oh, yeah. I gotta love face melter.
All right, so what's our, if it's not book recap, what is our topic today?
Well, we're going to do a general topic, something that is just kind of about comics in general.
Okay.
And, of course, there'll be some Valiant talk in there.
Yes.
But today we're going to be talking about covers, book covers.
We've got covers. Covers!
That's how we know if a book is good or not, by judging it by the cover.
Exactly. Yes. This episode, we are going to judge books by their covers, and we're just going to get into covers in general because, you know, covers, it's a really important part of the comic. And so, and I don't think we've ever really dug into it really, really deeply. And, of course, who knows where this may go. We may start talking about variant covers and all the madness that comes with those.
Right.
And all sorts of stuff. So we'll... We'll get with that. So,
sure.
I think that we should start.
Well, on our little like list that we have, Variant Cover Madness was the first one.
That was just like the most prominent. You want to just like hop into that one then?
You could do whatever you guys want to do.
I think
I don't really have a lot to say about variants.
Do you like them, Chiclo?
I like some of them.
Do you like variance as an idea, as a concept?
I don't know. At the same time, it puts out more covers.
Right.
Where, you know, you can pick one you like. Yeah. But at the same time, I feel it dilutes the hobby somewhat.
Dilutes it? What do you mean by diluting it? I'm not exactly sure in what way you mean that.
When you start having five and six covers for a single issue, every single issue, the covers start to mean less.
So so diluting in the sense of like watering down the importance of any particular book?
Yeah, taking away from the cover, even though that's the most visible part of the comic.
Okay. Well, what do you think, LV? Do you like them?
Just a reference, you know, preface this. I'm a, you know, new person into the whole comic industry. So my knowledge is...
Which is hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Consider, you're the new person in the comic industry who's basically now read every, like, important run of comics ever, deals comics, is setting up at a comic book convention.
Right.
Personally knows tons of comic book artists.
Yes.
From interacting with them. Tons of comic book writers, but as a new person.
Yes. So, okay. I definitely see the interesting juxtaposition there. But I guess what I was saying is that I don't have the, like, good old day, maybe, when variants were rare. Okay? In the 80s, or when you two were probably reading comics, you know, and maybe there weren't variant covers. I don't know. So that's what I'm saying. My comments are kind of based off the last, you know, I guess since Valiant, and really the last 6 years, 5 years. Anyways, here's my point. I think with variants, if I was a comic book company, I would definitely be making them, because I understand a great percentage of my consumers have a gotta have them all mentality. Not everybody, but I would say a majority have that mentality. So therefore, if I can make one product but make you buy it multiple times, I'm going to do that. That just seems to be good business. But, you know, one of my questions was to ask you two, you know, I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask you guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my first question was, how many people, because Chico said something interesting. He said variant covers gives him a choice between which cover he likes the best. How many people do you think that read and collect comics, buy multiple covers, or multiple covers of the variants, or are they doing what Chiclo said he does, which is maybe just choose one he likes the best?
I think that it's a very small minority that's buying both.
Okay.
But still enough to be significant.
All right.
I know that... For most books, like when I was buying a lot of DC books, when I would read a lot of DC books, sometimes I'd go into the shop and there'd be two different covers. Right. I would just pick the one that I liked the most.
Okay.
Because I was just buying them because I like to read them. And okay. I didn't really care about which variant cover I was getting or wasn't getting. That just wasn't important to me. And I think there's a lot of people like that.
On those covers you're talking about, those are probably then AB covers, correct?
Yeah, those would be AB covers.
AB covers.
Yeah.
So how does it change when there is a 1 in 10 or a 1 in 20? So a true, because for me, when I think of variant, I think of a less amount of that cover making it more valuable to consumers. I don't necessarily think of the AB cover.
So like a limited variant?
More like, so
or
I guess.
Or an incentive variant.
An incentive or a limited variant.
Okay.
What do you guys think about that?
I think they're cool. They give something fun,
right?
You know, to collect if you want to.
Sure.
What I think is it adds another way to collect if you want to,
right.
And it adds another thing to collect if you want to. And if you don't want to collect it, then you don't. Then it's no big deal, you know.
Right.
That's always been my feeling about them.
I can understand why a comic book company would put out a limited variant, a 1 in 20 or a 1 in 25. That being said, the Harbinger number 8, 1 in 125 variant is my favorite cover so far out of the Valiant line, but it's you know, a 1 in 125, I'm not going to be able to get that anytime soon. Maybe 5 or 6 months down the line, it'll be a $30 book and I can pick one up.
Uh-huh. Right.
But, you know, my favorite cover out of the whole line, I'm not willing to pay for it.
Right now.
Yeah, right now, yeah.
Or at least what the asking price would be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. By the same token, I was at the comic shop in Lubbock several months ago, last month, and they had a 25-cent bin, and I'm digging through, and they got a bunch of Kirby Genesis issues. Okay. I run across one, I pull it out, and I've got kind of a weird feeling about it. I open up to the last page where they've got a guide to all the covers that they put out for that issue, and it's the 1 in 10 variant.
Okay.
And I went ahead and picked it up for a quarter because I kind of like the artist that drew it.
Okay.
You know, I'd gladly pick that up for a quarter.
Right. Do you guys think that people will buy variants because of the cover or because of the fact it's a limited variant?
Now, that's an interesting question.
There's a lot of comic fans out there, and there are people buying for both reasons.
Yeah, and it's I think that's it's getting into the thing I think with collecting variant covers is it really quickly you get lots of people collecting in different ways and for different reasons when you get into those types of variants, because there are some people who are gonna just try to get the ones that they really like, because I'm with you, Chico, in that I really want that variant to Harbinger number 8. That's one of the few books that I've seen where I've decided, you know what, I really want to get that variant, and so I'm going to really try to make sure that I can get that copy, even though I've kind of been passing on some of the other incentive variants that have been coming out in the last few months. So I've kind of shifted to I only want to get when they're actually like really awesome covers that I really want to have.
Okay.
And so it being more about it being a particular piece of art that I like than it is being about just being an incentive cover for a book that I like. But I think it goes both ways.
Okay.
So the thing, I guess the first step is like, do you think variant covers are cool? Like the incentive covers are cool. Do you think like it's a cool thing to add to the hobby?
I do. I think it's a great thing for the hobby. I think that you know, we all want to feel like we own something special, that our stuff is cool, or what we have is something neato, kino, whatever it may be. Now, we all assign value in different ways, but if you are a collector of some comic book, whatever it may be,
uh-huh,
and you're able to get a limited – now, I'm not talking AB covers here. I'm talking a lot, like for me, a variant for my entire discussion is, I guess, either a limited variant or an incentive variant, some sort of ratio, 1 in 10, 1 to 20, whatever it is. I don't necessarily see like an A and B cover as a variant, like, for example, Valiant's pull box situation, which in all actuality is an AB cover. I think the idea of the pull box was good. I don't think it was
properly executed.
Very good. Properly executed by everyone involved. Now, I don't really think it's Valiant's fault. I do. I don't think it – because I think
it was incredibly well executed.
Really?
Yeah. It's just that some shops are terrible at executing things.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, because I see it as an AB cover. So to me, it's not a variant at all.
Let's step back, just in case somebody's listening and they don't know like what AB means and incentive means. Let's just run through that real fast, just because I'm imagining somebody listening being like, what the heck are they talking about?
It was my grandfather's blood type.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
So AB covers means there's just two covers, and comic dealers can order as many copies of either cover A or cover B as they want. And usually they'll order 50-50 of both, and they'll just show up, you know, and they'll put both on the stands, and you can just choose which of the two covers you want. That's pretty the standard A-B thing.
Right.
And then you get incentive covers, where for every 10 copies of the regular book, you can that a dealer orders, they can order one copy of the special 1 in 10 variant. Or right. Then a 1 in 25 would be, you know, if they order 25 copies of the book, they can order one of the variant. Or 1 in 50.
1 in 100, 1 in 200,
whatever. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So then the higher the ratio, the rarer the book equals higher the value.
Yeah. So a 1 in 100 is usually a lot more rare than a 1 in 50.
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think what we've all seen is that a lot of people feel like there's too many variants coming out
from
Valiant.
Okay.
And that it's become really, really difficult to collect all the Valiant books with all of the variants. And I think that, you know, we've seen on message boards and stuff, people like feeling kind of like resentful about that, man, there's just like too many. Why are they doing this? It's busting my wallet as a collector.
Right. Can I address that point quickly?
Yeah, I want to address it as well. But yeah,
All right. So what I'll say is that, and again, I don't want to say anything to anyone in particular. So if anyone listening in the OTV listener crowd, I got no hate for any of you. But in general, I think that to be mad at a company for any action is kind of silly, in my opinion. I think you can – if you don't like what they're doing, then don't support them with your money. Simple as that. So if, for example, Valiant putting out all of the covers, I really couldn't care if they put out 50 covers per book. I mean, that'd be ridiculous, of course. I'm just being over the top. So that doesn't necessarily bother me that Valiant's putting out so many covers.
You're not as over the top as you think. I mean, DC's doing 53 variants for Justice League number one.
Right. So yeah. I guess I'm not being totally over the top. But if they put out, you know, I don't mind that pretty, not almost, but maybe about, what, 80% of the books have, well, actually probably more than that, 95% of the books have multiple covers per book.
All of them but one.
All of them but one? I think, was it X-07, right?
X-Men War 7 didn't have any variants. All, and that had the lowest print run out of the entire X-O run.
Right. Because people weren't ordering as much because there was no variant, so... Mm-hmm. So variants obviously are working because it was a low.
There's a very real and demonstrable incident where that you can point to, or a data point to prove that variants are better for these companies. They're moving more product.
Right. And whatever the reason they're doing it is, you know, up to debate, but that's what is happening. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily mind that they're doing the variants. I do have something I do mind, but I think let's cover this first. Sean, do you mind they're doing all the variant covers?
Wait, I'm sorry, what's this? Oh, do I mind that? Oh, no. Dude, if they make more money by making variant covers, then I want them to do that. You know, I basically, I want them to do whatever makes Valiant the most money so that they have more money to then apply to making more books, to put out more books that I want to read.
Yes.
That's my feeling. So if they have to put out variant covers in order to do that, and if that means every single book has between 2 and 4 covers, and I'm never going to have a complete collection, that is fine with me.
Right.
If that means that I am reading Valiant Comics for, what, the next decade.
Sure.
You know?
And that's what I think. Chico, what do you think about that?
I'm pretty much the same way, Sean.
All right.
It's just how the world works right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Though I will say, I went through about a week where I was feeling a bit like bitter and resentful.
Okay.
And it was right around, I think, the fourth month, probably when Archer and Armstrong was coming out, when I realized, hey, I just can't get every book. I can't get every variant of every book. And that I decided, you know what, I'm just not going to keep up with all the variants. And for a while, it was a short little while. I was like, yeah, this really sucks. Like, this isn't fun because I'm, like, spending all this money trying to get all these variants, and I'm just, like, you know, it stinks that it's, like, continuing to be so costly to do this.
Right.
But then I realized, you know, it's nothing external. It's all internal, you know?
Right.
You know, like, I have no need to get any variants of any DC comics or Marvel comics or Image comics.
Right.
You know, it's only something that I've created for myself. this desire to have all the books.
Right.
And once I realized, or kind of came to terms with the fact that, hey, you know, this is all on me, that I'm the one creating this urge to get all these books. It's not created by anyone external. The fact that they make these books doesn't mean that I have to want them and buy them.
Right.
Once I kind of came to terms with that, it was I found peace with it.
All right.
Yeah.
I actually have something interesting to share on that line. I was getting, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I was getting all of the variant covers, every cover of Valiant,
mm-hmm.
from a place. And they were not cheap at all. But that's what I was doing. I was getting every cover, and I figured that, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm a grown man. I have a job. I'm going to do it. And I was enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And the store is not geographically that close to me, so I would go out there every few to pick up, you know, a stack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few things where I haven't been able to get out there for some reason, blah, 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 and it was a pretty big stack. So I went out there, and I was looking at these books, and they're all there, pretty much. A couple mm-hmm. of them were missing, which was strange, but they had a big stack of variants, probably like 12 or 13. Of the variants.
Okay.
And I was looking at them. I thought to myself, man, I just can't afford this right now. At this point, at this exact moment, I just couldn't afford it. And I kind of had a little bit of an issue in the store with myself. I kind of walked around for a little bit, kind of had some internal conversations, much like you probably did. I didn't quite have the anger, but I just had a thing to saying, well, I just can't get these. And they're right in front of me. And I want them because I want them, because they're rarer, because they are cool, because, you know, the set will stay complete and all of that stuff. I just decided I couldn't do it. I just didn't have the money when it came down to it. And I'm not looking for a woe is Elvine, but I'm just saying I just didn't do it. So what I was able to kind of quickly turn my head around into is that it's just going to give me something to hunt down the road.
Ah. Okay.
You know what I mean? And yeah. That's kind of, I mean, because I want them. I desire to have them. And, you know, my desire to have them is not because the cover is so cool. My desire to have them is strictly for the rarity issue. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, this cover is so awesome. I want to have this cover because it's so great. I'm only into comic books for the story. That's what interests me.
Uh-huh.
The most. So the collecting part with Valiant is something different. You know, Valiant's the only, you know, company that I collect. So I'm not getting all the variants now, and I'm probably going to go from having a great majority of them to not really having many of them, of the ones that are going to keep coming out. But I want Valiant to keep making them. And if I find them at a price where I can buy them, I'll jump at them. And if I'm at a con and looking around, I'm always looking for those. When I walk into a shop, I always ask the guys, hey, do you have any Valiant variants by chance? And if they did and they were in the price range, I would definitely buy them.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I'm at that point now where it's just, I think like what you said, it's just getting, I mean, if it's 5 books a month, which at least one variant and probably one or two of those are going to have 2 variants per cover, I mean, that's just a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah. But I want them. I desire them. Gives me something to hunt down later.
That's an interesting perspective. That's kind of just like the, hey, I can get around to it.
Yeah, I'll find them.
Yeah.
Or I won't, or either way, something. Trade for them, get them.
One of the things that I realized is, so I think a lot of the Valiant completionists,
yeah.
That whole idea of owning every Valiant comic came up when we were all buying all the, you know, classic Valiant comics, all from the 90s, where there weren't that many variants, and you could get every Valiant comic.
Right.
Because it's pretty easy to get every Valiant comic. You know, there's a few that are tough if you want a complete set of every single Valiant comic, especially if you include the VVSS issues in the Valiant. Right. Validated signature series.
About 85% are relatively easy with patience to find for cheap.
And then of that remaining 15%, I would say probably 80% to 90% of those are easy to find just for not cheap. And
yeah.
You know, I guess what I'm saying is like,
saying.
like, you can go out and spend $40 and get a Harbinger 1 right now. Or whatever it is.
You can find most of these books any given day on eBay.
Yeah, but, you know...
Not necessarily cheaply. But,
yeah.
Like, for example, a Unity Red. You could probably do a search on eBay, and there's a few on there.
Yeah.
Chaos Effect Alpha Red. There might be one or two on eBay at any given time.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you can get them. They're readily available. It may take longer if you want to only pay $5 or $10 for it. That is going to take some time, but it's very doable. But so I think a lot of the people that are collecting Valiant now, they collected the original Valiant, where having every single book was pretty easy.
Was part of it.
Yeah, it was easy and attainable also.
Right.
Because there just weren't many variants made back then. You know, it's probably only 10% of what Valiant made back in the 90s was a variant book. Probably
not even that close. There'd be like 70 books.
Yeah,
at variants.
So like 5%. We're talking.
I mean, if you count the VVSs, the VVSs are the variants. Besides, if you think about Valiant, besides VVSs, which were really, I guess, not necessarily true variants because the cover's not different. They just signed it and validated that it was a signature by them.
Uh-huh.
So if you're looking at a different cover. I mean, I could probably name the different covers on almost one hand.
No. If you count the golds differently.
Okay, yeah. I guess if you count the golds.
Yeah, there's like 10 or between 10 and 15 10 each, and 15. I think, of the golds and the VVSSs.
Right.
That's what sounds about right to me. Anyway, we're getting like getting into, you know, random numbers that don't matter. My point is it's easy to do.
Sure.
It's possible to do. So then with this new Valiant, I think a lot of people are feeling, well, I want to still be a Valiant completionist. And now it's much harder than it was back then. And I think that we, like a lot of people, built up this completionist mentality from collecting books that came out in a time where it was possible to be a completionist. And now it's much, much more difficult to be a completionist.
Right.
And so like they're applying an old mindset to a new situation, and it doesn't quite work out. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes from.
I think that's the best way to put it, Sean, is that it's an old way of looking at a new problem. And also a lot of the people I think that got into Valiant got into it after Valiant was a dead universe.
Yeah.
So it's a complete finite thing, and you can find 90% of the books for cheap, or if you go to the Valiant fans, you know, board, a lot of people just give those to you. And it's that hunt for those old things. Now you're finding that these Valiant variants that are coming out, some shops, some people out there listening to OTV right now, they can't get them anywhere but eBay. They're not in their towns. They're nowhere close. They're just not around.
Yeah.
And that can be frustrating. And I could definitely see the frustration with that. You know, my issue with Valiant and their variant program is the confusion that is often associated with it.
Mm-hmm. I know it has been kind of confusing. I feel like we've been talking about like the variant cover madness for a while, and we got a whole lot more cover stuff because I actually want to spend some time just kind of talking about the fun parts of
Let's
covers.
Let's do it.
So I want to talk about the most iconic Valiant covers.
VH1.
Yeah. Classic 90s Valiant.
Can we do like a top three or a three? We'll kind of go one by one by one like that?
Sure.
And again, maybe not top three in order, but ones that you think are cool.
Well, I guess it's a different question of what are the most iconic and which we think are the coolest, I think.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I suppose.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess I just take what I mean, I guess in my mind, what I think is cool equals iconic.
I think this is a good conversation to have before we get too far into this. What do you think of as iconic?
So when I say iconic, what I typically mean is it's a book that everybody is like very representative of Valiant and that most people are familiar with. And it's like kind of – it would be like the poster child for collecting Valiant comics. It's like, you know how Amazing Fantasy 15 and Fantastic Four number 1 are iconic Marvel books, you know? That's kind of what I mean in the sense of iconic.
But when I was working on this list, I kind of came up with two different categories. universally iconic, where a lot of people would, you know, when you think about Valiant Comics, what covers come to mind? Those that a lot of people are going to think of.
But really, doesn't that just mean the hot, popular, expensive Valiant books? That's what that means. No?
That's not what that means.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, no, not at all. We'll talk about that when we get to the list.
All right.
For me, I've also got personally iconic books. Books that the covers really stand out to me, and I just they stick with me. Because of my personal experience, I think of these covers when I think about certain kinds of comics.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think, obviously, I think one of the most iconic books from Old Valiant is Harbinger Number 1.
Sure. Of course. Yeah.
Like, that's got to be probably the most iconic Valiant book.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
But it, again, that's why I'm saying that, to me, that's kind of like the most popular Valiant book.
Not necessarily, because I've got a list on here, including several that are not real popular.
Right. I think Ride Zero is a book that's iconic, but that's not necessarily expensive. That's probably the only one, I would say.
Eternal Warrior Yearbook Number 1.
Now you're digging here. Let me look.
Yeah, I mean, I know the book.
It's one. It's kind of a painted cover. He's holding up his hand. He's got the spikes on his fist.
Got the fist going up in his hand.
It's like half the background is the Union Jack.
It's all the Union Jack.
I don't think anyone would know that cover, personally. Except
really?
Valiant.
See, that's not iconic, I don't think.
No.
No way.
In my opinion, not at all. I think iconic is going to be, Rise Zero, Harvey 1, Rye 3, Unity.
Silver 1, Rye 5.
I would say, not Rye 5, I think Rye 3 more than 5.
See, I don't even think Rye 3 is in there.
I think Rye 3 is a great cover, but see, I think we have a different definition of what the word iconic means.
Archer and Armstrong Zero.
I think iconic would mean that you could show it to any collector and they would know what book it is. Or the majority of collectors would know what book it is.
Right.
That's what it means to me.
Right, and I guess for me, most collectors would know what books Valiant were back from Wizard's Top 10 list, therefore it's the hot Valiant list to me.
Right now, most people wouldn't know Rye 3. Most collectors. Only, like, hardcore Valiant collectors.
I can think of Rye 2. That's the one where he's fighting the
Ice Spike.
Ice Spike.
Yeah.
Rye 4 is the one where he's fighting the yellow...
The big, like, almost the same thing that Arik fought in XO1. Same kind of type of machine.
What's Rye 3? That's the obscure
dragon.
One.
That's the dragon.
The giant, like, right. Dragon head, and Rai is, like, suspended in front of it.
Oh, yeah, okay,
tentacles are grabbing him. See, and I was just saying because most people from the 90s will know that book, because that was, like, a $90 book back in the day. That was like Wizard Top 10 for, like, months, so they'll know that book. The same
Magnus
with Harvey.
Magnus 2, that's a good one.
It's not an iconic cover, though.
Yes, it is, with all the robots coming after Magnus and going off the ledge.
It's an awesome cover, but it's not iconic. That's what I would think. I feel like we're mixing up iconic with covers we love,
right?
Or covers that we think everybody should know. Because on my list for most iconic, I think Harbinger Number 1, Rye 0, and Solar 10 as the and maybe Unity 0 as the most iconic.
What about XO 10? Does anybody acknowledge XO
10?
Yeah. The hand coming up out of the grave.
No.
That's a great cover, but that's not an iconic book. It's a great cover. See, I think Chiclo and I are making the same list of books. I think covers are awesome.
Yeah. So
and
let's
Sean's
just,
looking
let's just,
for something different.
Yeah, like I'm. Yeah, let's just then talk about which covers are awesome. Let's do that, because it seems like that's the conversation we want to be having.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got a list of four.
Okay,
Solar Number 1. Archer and Armstrong Zero, Eternal Warrior Yearbook Number 1, and it was really hard for me to pick from Magnus 0 to 3, because all three covers were really iconic to me.
Okay.
I picked Number 3 as the one that was most iconic. Yeah, that's the one with Tekla putting her own hand, her own arm on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are good ones.
Yeah. I had some backups too.
So what are some of your backups?
XO-10, Psylords 1, Rai 5, and Time Walker 14.
Wow.
Time Walker 14. I don't even remember.
That's like, the one with the guy with the flat hat, kind of like the guy from Mozart. From
Wow, like, I'm a Valiant
fan. Like his dad was dressed up as.
I can't even pick out Time Walker 14 without looking at it, and I'm a Valiant fan, so you got me on that one.
Dude. Mostly white background.
Yeah, it's a black shadow, right? And it was written by guest writer. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm seeing
really,
it.
I really like that.
I would say the covers that fit into what Sean's talking about is Harvey 1, Rai 0, and I think you're right, Solar 10, except the only thing is there's a lot of books that have kind of done that either since or around that time, so I don't think it sticks out quite as much.
That's true.
Been many times I'm flipping through a back issue bin, and I pull up a book, and I think it's Solar 10, and it's not. You know,
probably Tribe number 1.
Try number 1. There's a couple Shadowhawk books that are like that. There's another weird book I always seem to pick up. And then, of course, Valiant just put out Shadow Man 1 Pull Box.
Yeah, which is really similar.
Which is very similar.
At our local comic book shop, Jim Valentino comes in a lot.
Sure.
I've always wanted to try to catch him and see if he'd buy a bunch of Shadowhawk back issues off of me.
He probably has some. I think if you're looking back in the day for the maybe your kind of thing, Sean, uh-huh. I think you're right on with Harbinger. I think you're right on with Rai Zero. I think Unity needs to be in there because Unity is the start of Valiant mainstream, and I think a lot of people are going to know what that book, that cover is.
Uh-huh.
So I think if you look at people that aren't Valiant collectors, they'll talk about the Unity books, the Frank Miller covers, and all that type of stuff because that's what they're going to remember about Valiant are those covers. I don't particularly like almost any of those covers. Particularly, you know, and you know, for me, the kind of covers I like are different. You know, I like Rai 3 as a cover, but the reason I think I like it because I never had it back in the day. It was always the unobtainable, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what kind of drew me to it, you know. But like Chiclo said, XO-10 with the hand coming up, that's one of my favorite moments in Valiant because I was reading Valiant at the time. I thought it was a great cover because it happened after 9, one of my favorite EXO issues there was. And when you open that cover, that first page is him in the hole with all of the EXO armor like roots feeding him in the ground.
And yeah, that was amazing. Gnarly. So gnarly.
That was great. So I loved that. So that cover for me, like Chico said, sticks out a lot, but only because
the cover it's simple and it's striking and it sticks with you.
Yeah. So I think it's more to my favorite covers more than because I think iconic for Valiant you have a short list.
Yeah,
because by the nature of the word iconic and Valiant, there's only a few that could even make the list.
So what are some of your favorites?
Gosh, I got a lot of. I mean, I think, like I said, Rai 3 only because of what it stood for back in the day. I think Rai 0 is about the best you can get for a cover.
Simple and striking, right?
Simple and striking. You know, and again, if it's on the shelf, it's going to stand out.
Uh huh.
For sure. You know, those are probably the ones that are going to jump out at me right now. I also liked Shadow Man 8, which is the first Master Dark. I also got to give some love here, some Barry Windsor Smith love for Eternal Warrior, was that 6 and 7?
That's on my list.
Which is the Eternal Warrior glove and then Dark licking the blood off the big faces. Those are. I used to have like 60 copies of each of those books just because I'd buy them for a quarter whenever I saw them. Those are probably the ones that stick out the most to me personally. And I also type kind of like covers where I don't need to... Like, for example, like Solar 9 or Solar 8. Those are, I think, great covers, but you got to kind of look at them to see what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Where you can just look at Eternal Warrior 6, and you're like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to really study the detail of it. It's just one striking image, like Rai 0, the same type of thing. So I'm going to probably go with, like, Shadow Man 8 and then Eternal Warrior 6 and 7 as probably my favorite Valiant covers.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I've got a Eternal Warrior 6 and 7. Those were some of the first that come to mind for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those covers are awesome.
Yeah.
And the story itself is awesome. I think that those are probably that's the best two-part story.
Oh yeah, that's probably the best. Yeah, that's it. That's the best of Valiant right there.
Yeah, Ninjak number 2 is another one of mine.
Which that's is the water, right? That's the water, the Casada with the water.
And it's, the skull.
The yeah.
No, you know what? I was thinking of Ninjak number 3. I'm sorry, Ninjak number 3, which is it's kind of an Art Nouveau cover with Ninjak standing there and the lady's head.
The lady's head. That's number 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that one. Bloodshot 40, which is the awesome cover
of
Bloodshot in front of the American flag.
Yeah,
that one's really nice.
That one's rocking.
You know one that I've always really liked, which is not a cover I hear people talk about a lot, is Shadow Man number 1.
Yeah, good one.
And I think it's just, I like the composition, I like the colors of it, it's just something about it.
That cover tells a story, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Tells a story because, I mean, Jack's walking. He's walking out of the shadow. There's the dude who's, like, about to murder that lady.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, obviously, Solar number 10. That's going to be one of my favorites. And Solar number 5 I really like a lot, which is the one where Phil's
thinking,
just...
right? He's just contemplating?
Yeah, Phil's just... Yeah. He's just... sitting there in his chair, kind of slumped back in his chair, and his solar helmet is floating in front of him. He's making it his outfit float in front of him.
Yeah.
That's a real good one, too.
Yeah,
it's striking.
It's striking, and you can kind of understand the like pathos of what's going on.
Yeah.
That's one thing about it, yeah. Okay, so do you think any of the current Valiant covers have made it to Iconic yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't think so at all.
All right.
I don't think anything new Valiant is Iconic yet because it hasn't reached that level.
Okay. All right.
But there's some I like a lot.
We kind of covered those in the best
the
of.
The year end.
I would think that the closest one that has come to being Iconic is the Exo Manowar QR variant.
Yeah.
Oh.
I agree. I think both of those. I think the Exo and the Harvey one, are the ones that people will kind of go back to.
It just seems like for a while that Exo QR cover seemed like it was just everywhere. Like they had posters and all sorts of promotional stuff surrounding that. So that's why that one really jumped out at me.
Yeah. What have you guys thought of the overall Valiant covers of the new Valiant?
And now you're talking like just artistically. Visually.
Yeah, just how they look and all that kind of stuff.
I think they're great. What I like is that they, it seems like it's still a anything goes kind of idea with the covers, where it really seems like they're still just willing to do kind of anything, you know? Like, they haven't really settled into, well, this is the kind of covers we make. You know, the Lemire variant to number 8 is a great example that Chiquo and I are so excited about.
Right.
You know,
or that that one Archer and Armstrong. I think he's number 4.
The one
variant.
Uh huh. The wanted poster. That's a clever cover that stands out in crowd.
Uh huh. Yeah. And I was just thinking, the book I was just reading right before we started recording, Bloodshot 7. The cover to that, it's just the Harbinger bird with the bullet holes and the blood dripping out of it. It's like it doesn't tell you anything really about what's the content of the book, but it's still a very striking cover.
Mm.
And I think a lot of the Harbinger covers have been really interesting, like the cover to number 4 where Pete is like sitting on the page that shows the pictures of all the students.
Right.
You know, like that's a really interesting compositionally.
Yeah.
And kind of an interesting image to show. So what I like is it feels like they're still willing to just kind of put out all sorts of covers, all sorts of types of covers.
I hope they keep pushing that envelope. I hope that's one thing that they keep on doing is kind of looking for different ways to kind of different covers.
Yeah.
You know, I hope they do that. You know, I would love for them to do some of the kind of not cartoonish. But, like, I would love them to get a Chris Giarrusso, Stan Sakai. I mean, my absolute dream would be to have them have a Rob Gilroy cover, which is a guy from Chew. I would love to see his take of what it comes off, and I think that'd be great to do something like that for them.
That would be cool.
That'd be very cool.
Yeah. So who are some of your guys' favorite cover artists? Just, like, in general. This is, a tough question. And I know I should have spent a lot more time thinking about it.
You know,
I probably should have spent more time thinking about it, too.
Yeah, I'm not going to have much of an answer for this one, unfortunately. Uh-huh. I have guides because, you know, I've been able, fortunate enough to meet a lot of comic book artists.
Uh-huh.
So I associate them with the work they do for me, not necessarily the work they do on the comic covers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I know one that I like. I like, I think it's, isn't it James Jean who does all the Fables covers?
James Jean?
I'm not sure the name.
I think it's James Jean. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Buckingham does the interiors. And I think it's James Jean, I'm pretty sure, that does all those Fables covers, and I really like those. I'll also give a shout out to Chrissy Zulo, who is awesome.
She does some really nice stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know what? It is James Jean. James Jean, I don't know if he does all of them, but yeah.
They are really nice. All those covers, it gives the book a very distinct look.
Yes.
They're very artistic in a good
way. Yes. And I like that. I like that.
So I really like Adam Hughes. I mean, everyone likes Adam. You know? Who doesn't like Adam? I mean, there's a reason why everyone loves his stuff, and it's just because it's that good, you know?
Yeah.
He's great. Another one that I really...
Hold on. Yep. Favorite Adam Hughes cover.
Oh.
It's a tough one. Favorite Adam Hughes cover.
Oh, man.
Mine's easy.
Okay, what is yours?
Catwoman 51.
Is that where she's holding the...
That's the lost numbers.
That's
in
right.
In jail, it's like the headshot of her in jail. I think that cover is so striking, man. That's just striking.
If I'd known we were going to get asked that question, I would have looked it up. Maybe one of the Mystique covers. I'm thinking of Greg Horn anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't really name my favorite Adam Hughes cover. All I know is just every time he draws something, it looks awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Another one I really like is Barry Windsor Smith. I really like his covers.
Favorite one?
Uncanny X-Men 198.
Huh. I'm going to have to Google that right now.
It's Storm, like, up in the air, just kind of standing up in the air with her arms stretched out in the middle of a storm, and it's all...
Does it look like Armstrong? I'm sorry, Archer? Does she look like Archer?
No, well...
No, Archer looks like Storm.
And they look Rogue.
Very similar. Yeah, that's a cool cover.
I really like that cover a lot. Cool cover. I really like that one.
All right. I'm going to say my favorite Barry Windsor Smith cover is going to be Eternal Warrior 7, which is the dark cover.
That's pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
For sure.
Archer and Armstrong 0.
Great.
The one that the reason I don't like Zero quite as much is because I feel like, well, it's just a foreground figure. Like, there's nothing else, you know. It's just like two figures against a design. But the Archer and Armstrong cover I really like is number 6, which is Andy and Archer riding on
Flo.
Riding on Flo with Armstrong running out in front of them.
Yeah.
I think that's a great cover.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna give a shout out to someone who I don't think is very popular right now. A lot of hate, but I'm gonna give a shout out to Greg Land. I thought his Sojourn covers were amazing.
Greg Land and Greg Horn, I get confused all the time.
I think they're very similar. I think
they have a very similar style.
Or maybe
Greg Land.
Greg...
A lot of people get down on him for tracing stuff. But
maybe Greg Horn is one who gets the hate. One of those two guys gets a lot of hate lately.
Very, very striking, both of them.
Yeah, the Sojourn stuff was just... I thought all that stuff was great. So he had really good covers. But like I said, most of the comic artists, and I've been able to meet a bunch of them, thankfully, I know them for what they do for me. You know what I mean? Adam Hughes is amazing. His covers are incredible.
Yeah.
One other that I really love is David Mack.
David Mack.
Yeah.
Don't even know who that is.
Dude, do you, You'll recognize the images when you if you do.
It's paint. It's like painted.
It's like watercolored.
Yeah, I like that. I like that painted stuff.
I love his artwork. It's just
and I don't know who does the Sandman covers, but those are always freaky crazy too.
Dave McKean.
There you go, that dude.
Yeah. So you know, I just saw something interesting recently about those covers, because if you look at those covers, like they're not all they're like assembled, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like a collage. It's like a
yeah.
What I'm looking for, it's like there's like pieces of stuff in it. It's like made, not necessarily drawn or painted.
So what I saw was actually the original of one of those, and it was like original from one of the first like 8 issues. Whoa. And what he would actually build that thing, and this thing was like 2.5 feet tall or something, and he had like a painting in the middle, and on the side was like this little cabinet that he had built, and he'd actually like put. Because there's all this weird, there'll be like eggs and little trinkets and like weird knickknacks and this and that and like burnt candles or whatever, all sorts of crazy stuff. He would actually build this thing. It's a 3-dimensional like statue almost.
It always seemed like almost like a shadow box to me.
Yeah, like a shadow box. It's like a diorama kind of.
Right. Yeah, totally like that. Right.
And then he took pictures of it, and that's how he made the covers. Really, really cool stuff. Right. Yeah.
And I'll throw one more name out here. I think I mentioned him once already before, but I'm going to go with Stan Sakai.
Yep.
Yeah.
His covers are incredible, and if I could get one person to do a Valiant cover, it would be amazing to have a Stan Sakai Valiant cover. That would be like hot as hot cakes. But I love his stuff because if you look at it, like, oh, it's kind of simple, but there's so much emotion in all of his covers, man. It's awesome. Love Sakai, just a champion.
Cool.
Yeah. I've got a list here.
Let's hear it.
Ryan Sook.
Ooh.
Whoa. Interesting.
That is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he would do wonderful Harbinger covers. He's got a very expressive face that he draws.
I like good face.
Yeah. Steve Rude.
The Rude dude.
Yeah, the Rude Dude. Amy Reeder.
Yeah.
Her Madame Xanadu covers were amazing.
Yeah, she's good, bro. You're right, dude. Yeah. It's awesome.
Amanda Connor. Kind of cartoony, but, you know,
in a
lighthearted way. Doesn't
love
take her art too seriously. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She would be one that would probably make my just favorite comic book illustrators list.
Yeah. She's Amanda great. Connor.
Yeah.
Then Billy Tucci.
I tell you, that guy is so awesome. OTV. Yeah. If you're ever at a show, get a chance to talk to Bill. He is such a good guy, man. Oh, that dude is so cool.
He is. I got to talk to him in Wizard World, and we bought some original art from him. He did a couple of sketches. Great guy.
He's awesome. And then if we're going to go covers, again, like Valiant. So mine's kind of like a Valiant wish list, I suppose.
Okay.
you know.
Uh-huh.
So Zulo, James Jean, the dude, Rob Gilroy from Chew, Stan Sakai, and I think Mignola has got such a great style. I gotta admit, I love Mignola.
Hmm.
What titles would you put them on?
To me, it doesn't matter. You know, I think Mignola could do a great Bloodshot, would do a great XO.
I think Mignola would do a really good Shadow Man.
I mean, I think he'd do good whatever, honestly. Yeah. And again, you know, I don't think Valiant can get these guys just because, but, you know, that'd be my other one. Now, I can tell you I was actually at Kamikaze in L.A., and I was waiting in line to get some books signed by this guy. And you could tell he was like telling his wife, you know, I need a break, I need a break, I need a break. And, you know, we got to do something because the line is just epically long, but he'd apparently been signing forever. So they said, hey, last one, you know, he's going to need to take a break, come back like in half an hour. And when he was done, he looked up and he saw me and he waved me over. He's like, come, you know, come over. Let me do it for you real quick. And while I was sitting there, another guy came walking up, and I was like, yeah. And then, you know, so he signed my books, and then he left. So the guy was talking to the dude's wife about trying to get him to do a cover. And, you know, in a nice, polite way, she pretty much said, it's almost impossible. You know, he turns down, like, 8 for every 2 he does. And that's J. Scott Campbell.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Who is, you know, I mean, if he does a cover for you, your book sells.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's so many covers that he, there's so many books that he does that, because, you know, I deal with the back issue market. So many books that he does that are popular just because he did them.
Interesting.
A classic example would be like, let's say, like Amazing 607, which is a Black Cat cover he did. And the books around there are fairly, you know, $5. There's really no value in them. That book's like a $20 to $25 book.
Wow.
Just because of that cover.
That's pretty interesting.
I mean, I would say that him and probably Adam Hughes are probably the two most maybe in-demand kind of cover dudes there are that I would think of.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, so let's shift gears and talk about like some other kinds of things about covers, because
okay.
I've got a few things. Like, I wanted, there's different types of covers, and I wanted to ask what you guys think of these different just kind of aspects of comic book covers. So, do you think that a cover should have a scene from the book in it, or do you like it when it does do that?
I don't think there's any one correct answer to that. It's not. I can't really answer it yes, no.
Yeah, I know. I know it's kind of like that, because there's going to be plenty of other types of covers that I want to throw out.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just kind of just throwing it out there to prompt conversation.
It's an art form, so you really can't put rigid metrics on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's one of those weird things that it's an art form, but it's also kind of a utilitarian thing, because the book is meant to convey something that is hopefully going to help sell something.
Right.
You know?
I mean, if you look at a lot of the old Valiant covers, they're not exactly perfect swipes from the book, but they're very similar to what's going on.
The very early covers were almost always that way.
Right. I mean, if you look at like Solar 3,
mm-hmm.
Solar 6,
yeah,
Solar 9, you know, I mean, XO 2, you know, XO4, all those are pretty much telling you this is what's going to happen in the book. Ride 3, Ride 4, Ride 5, Ride 2.
All the Magnus covers.
All the Magnus covers are telling you what's happening in the book. You know, I think if I owned a company, my only question for covers is going to be, is this going to assist me in getting my product noticed?
Yeah.
What can we do to get the person who wouldn't buy this book to buy it?
Mm-hmm.
That would be my question, you know? And that's where something like the Lemire variant for Harbinger 8, I think, is like hitting a grand slam walk-off World Series Game 7.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you're going to see that and you're going to say, oh my gosh, I absolutely need to have that if you saw that. Because it's just so crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
And especially if you're like a Lemire fan, because I think he draws in a very kind of like indie-minded crowd.
Right.
You know, with the kind of stuff he's done.
Right.
You know, like Sweet Tooth and Essex County, kind of stuff like that.
Got that indie street cred.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what about – so I don't really care either way if the book has a scene from the book. I tend to like covers that aren't scenes from the books more.
Okay.
Is what I've found. Right. I don't have any problem with it, but I just find, it doesn't really add anything for me. What about covers that are just like iconic images of a character? The Superman cover that's just like him like flying up through the clouds or something. You know, it like has nothing to do with anything. It's a very iconic image of that character.
It's just him in action, dude, looking awesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right.
What do you think of those types of covers?
I think it depends on how well it's done. Okay. I mean, like, for example, like I do like the what is it, Superman, is it 204? The Jim Lee cover? I don't know which one it is, what number it is.
Uh-huh.
Where Superman is kind of like, he's kind of like standing on the top of the building, just sort of standing there all looking like Superman. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, dude. You know? Or like,
yeah, I'm Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or even like Batman 608, which is, again, the first Jim Lee, that Hush book, the first Hush. I think that's a great cover, too. Just sort of like swinging. Mm-hmm. You know? Not anything to do with the title, just him looking awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I'm DC and I see that cover, I'm like, thank you, Jim Lee. There you go. That's what yep. I'm talking about. Thank you, Jim Lee.
Uh-huh.
You know?
You know, Jim Lee's another one that we didn't really talk about, but he draws awesome covers.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you say he is the number one creator in all of comicdom? The number one name?
I would say in terms of people still working in comics, yeah.
Yes, I'm not saying he's the best or he is – what he does is great, but I'm just saying the name, you know?
I would say so.
He's like the one.
Out of all the Image partners, he seems to have come out the he seems to have put himself in the best station of all of them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Seems to be the most successful of them.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking about this today because I've been going through a lot of books. This is going to be, you know, kind of a offshoot conversation here.
Offshoot. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
But DC, it seems like they really got a coup when they got Jim Lee to come work for them.
First
with doing the Batman Hush series and then the Superman stuff. Right. And now that Jim Lee is just like full on DC. Like, I was just thinking, what if Jim Lee had just gone back to Marvel? Just thinking about that, like, that would be such a difference, I think.
I agree.
In just kind of current comics. And I think I think a decent amount of DC's success has been because of Jim Lee.
I think you can make that argument for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he is the number one name draw. Listen, I've spent the last 4 years getting sketches from whoever I can.
Uh-huh.
I've never got a Jim Lee sketch. I've waited in lines. I've talked to Jim a number of times. He's indicated that he would love to help and do this. I make a joke about the sketch hustle that I have to do on there. I mean, that dude is always from place to place to place. I mean, he's got so many handlers at this show. It's incredible.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just because he's so in demand, you know, of where he is. So, yeah, he's awesome. It's very – his stuff is all, to me, very heroic superhero is his genre.
Uh-huh.
Very heroic superhero-y is his genre. Like where Adam Hughes' genre is like hot chicks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and he just draws awesome stuff.
Does that well, yeah.
So I like iconic Image covers when they're kind of in a series. Like,
I don't think every cover needs to be Superman doing something really Superman-y.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Superman needs to be on every cover of a Superman book?
No.
No.
Okay, cool.
That reminds me of there was this one random back issue of The Incredible Hulk back when I was buying comics when I was a kid. And in this one issue, my comic shop put a big sticker on this issue of Incredible Hulk. And it says, warning, the Hulk does not actually appear in this comic. Because I guess it was like just all about all the side characters and stuff, and the Hulk actually never showed up in that issue of the Hulk.
Right.
It was just kind of a funny thing that they put out there just because they thought it'd be funny. So,
was it a handwritten sticker, or did they have these like printed up laying around?
No, it was just like a handwritten sticker because it's just like this one particular back issue that they had in their back issue bin.
The Hulk does not appear in this issue.
Yeah.
I wonder if somebody like bought it and returned it, comes in just red-faced, the Hulk is not in this issue!
Yeah, I know.
I bought lawn for over summer for this money, and I wanted the Hulk!
I was promised the Hulk.
Banner on TV.
There was no Hulk.
Hulk.
Yeah, nice. When I say like books in a series, I mean like say it's something like a book like The Avengers. And for a story arc, they decide, well, for these six issues, each cover is going to be like a different member of the Avengers in some iconic pose. Like, stuff like that, I think, is cool.
Huh.
Like I'd be totally cool with it if, like, Valiant had, like, iconic pose month. Where,
yes,
you know, each book for that month, the main cover, like, all by the same artist, just, like, that character in an iconic pose. I think that that'd be really cool. Yeah, I really like that kind of thing.
Sure.
It'd be an interesting marketing gimmick.
Yeah.
Do you guys like when they do the cover swipes?
Oh, that's a really good question. Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that one. Yeah, I love that. I think it's cool. I like it because it feels like it's kind of like a game or something, or you feel like you're smart when you know, like, what the cover is like a swipe of.
Right.
So I do like that.
I like the cover swipes. I think it's pretty cool.
Chico has no opinion?
I like them, but it can be awfully arcane.
Mm-hmm. Awfully arcane.
Difficult to figure out which cover they're swiping.
Yes. No, I was aware of the arcane. I was just surprised at your use of that word. Because I think the cool thing about the cover swipe is that just exactly what you said, it can be difficult to figure it out. So when you do figure it out, you're kind of like, ha, I'm better than everybody else that hasn't figured it out yet.
What about, like, when it's an obvious one, like it's a cover to, like, Amazing Fantasy 15?
Kind of like what McFarlane's doing with Spawn right now, you mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Because McFarlane's doing all that. I mean, I guess for me, I don't want Valiant to do that because it's been done already.
Uh-huh.
What I think Valiant should do is swipe VH1. That would be cool.
That would be very cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
I just got a note from Mother God here saying this is a good one, and it's Justice League 12.
Of the New 52?
Yeah. It's horrible. It's Superman
and Wonder Woman kissing.
Oh.
Yeah. This is horrible.
That's the kissing cover, right? Jim Lee. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that only sold about 1 million books. So
I know. I'm
sure it was real horrible. It only, like, blew up the internet for a few days when it came out.
It's still horrible.
Hey, you know what I'm saying? Everyone's got to judge how they got to judge.
Horrible dollars spend just the same as tasteful dollars. So what about covers with word balloons on them? Do you care, or do you like it?
I don't
like it.
There are times when it's appropriate, and they are used in moderation. However,
kind of like Harbinger 1, used in moderation.
Well, no, not in that case. But
not in that case.
I mean, not every cover has to have a balloon on it.
Right.
But it depending on the tone of the book, if it's a very serious book, you probably shouldn't have word balloons on the cover.
Right.
Uh-huh. If it's lighthearted, it's appropriate.
What about Amazing 698?
I don't know what the cover to Amazing Spider-Man 698 looks
like. That's the one that just came out with Doc Ock, like, apparently, like him and Spider-Man. Uh-oh. Do I need to spoiler this? It's a couple
months.
Dude,
I don't know if I think you should try to be as spoiler-free on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't read it. I'm just aware of what's. I haven't read the book. It's, let's not talk about it.
Okay.
A good example of a really bad word balloon on a cover, and it's sad that I know this one off the top of my head, is Plasma number 1 from Marvel UK.
Oh,
Plasma?
Yeah.
Plasma.
Yeah.
The one that they sued Defiant out of existence for, cause, in case people got Plasma and Plasma confused.
Plasma number 1. I don't even know what you're
talking about. Plasma number 1. I'm Plasma. So am I, tee-hee.
Oh, yeah.
Well, everything about that cover is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. She's got some kind of weird shoulder pads on and, like, an impossibly cut bodysuit with gravity-defying chests.
Yeah.
Yes. So everything is wrong with comics in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't necessarily like word balloons on my books unless it's something clever. Then I can kind of laugh at it. But overall, keep the word balloons for the books.
If it's like the thing yelling at the anti-street gang, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Hmm. I was going through books because you know I'm pulling together books for our little excursion out to Phoenix, and I found one with word balloon that I always liked.
Which one was it?
It's Uncanny X-Men 260. It's a Jim Lee cover, and it shows this guy, and he has this maniacal look on his face, and he's holding a giant knife, and it says, "I love you, Dazzler, to death." And it's just, for some reason, that one has just always jumped out at me, and I've always kind of liked that one.
The disappointing thing about Dazzler is if you kill her, she comes back to life.
I didn't know she ever died. I mean,
she dies all the time. It just doesn't take.
Okay.
I don't know one thing about Dazzler. I know she's a chick, and I know her first appearance, I believe, is 130, I think.
Sounds
was
about
it Dazzler
right.
Number one, or was 130 her first appearance in X-Men?
No, Uncanny is a person.
Yeah, she first appeared in Uncanny.
Okay.
She appeared like in the issue right after Kitty Pryde, I think.
They were planning on making her a joint venture with one of the record companies at the time, and the record company backs out, and Marvel's left holding this property, and so they went ahead and did a Dazzler comic anyway.
Because Dazzler is 130 and Emma Frost is 131.
Okay, all right, I think
129.
I think Dazzler number one was the first comic book to ever be released only to the direct market. Is that right?
That may be what I'm thinking about Dazzler number one.
That sounds kind of familiar to me. Yeah. So let's talk about cover gimmicks.
Okay.
And this is kind of like all the chromium, die cut, blah, blah, blah.
Back in the day, loved it. Ate it up, loved it.
I still like chromium covers.
100% the target audience, and I dug it.
Yeah. Dude,
when the gold books came out from Valiant, I'm like, oh yeah, that's perfect. All the foil and the chromium and the shine and all that, oh yeah, it's all good.
When it was first coming out, it was really exciting, I think, because nobody had ever seen anything like it, you know?
Glow-in-the-dark covers, embossed, metallic inks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What's the craziest cover gimmick you guys can think of? Craziest cover gimmick.
The bullet hole, Protectors number 5.
Protectors 5? What? There's a hole through the entire book?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now that I say that, there was one put out. It was a small independent comic where the author actually took out the entire print run and shot it like a 9mm, and then there was a limited edition where he took the books out and shot them with a 12-gauge too.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that protector book has a hole through the entire thing.
Yeah, through the entire thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah.
Good choice.
You know, one gimmick they book that I always remember is Wolverine number 50, which had it was a die cut cover where the
slash marks and the
front
gray
cover is like a manila folder.
Right.
But it has three claw slash marks through it like the file information underneath. So right. I really like that one.
Right. That's a good one. That's pretty serious. I had a book. I'm not saying I like it, but I thought it was interesting. It was, I don't remember what it was. It was made of suede.
Whoa!
The cover. It was something like, I don't know.
Late Purgatory. Leather edition.
Something like that. And that, by the way, is Adam Freeman's favorite comic book. Of course, we all know that.
Uh-huh.
Lady Death Leather Edition. Adam Freeman. What's up, Adam?
Yeah.
Adam. But that I was like, wow, it was like real, like it was suede. I was like, huh. I think the best looking cover gimmicks that I've ever seen, and I know Chiclo will definitely appreciate this, is that Ultraverse Holo foil stuff.
Mm.
Yeah,
those are cool
Ultraverse
looking.
Ultraverse number one, you can hold it. It's a gold holo foil, and if you hold it at a certain angle, you can actually see color in the holograms.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's really cool.
Yeah. Those hologram covers were really well done.
Yeah, definitely. They're really cool.
They, they weren't like those dinky little Marvel hologram covers where they got a little trading card sized hologram on the front cover. No, the whole cover was a 3D look down into it hologram.
Really cool, man.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, those are pretty good.
Yeah. What's your favorite gimmick cover ever? Your personal favorite gimmick cover.
Mine's actually in my list of top five iconic covers for
Archer
me.
Armstrong Zero?
No. Secret Defenders number 12.
Whoa.
Oh, uh-huh.
He has all these things I don't even know what you're talking about. Let me Google this. Number 12?
Yeah, it probably won't photograph real well.
What is it? No, is it the Thanos face?
Yes.
And is it like sparkly?
Yes, very sparkly.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't know if I have actually ever seen that.
It's probably my favorite. It's definitely my favorite enhanced cover. One of my favorite covers ever.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
Yeah, I know how much you like Thanos, so I can definitely understand that.
Yeah.
There's a couple that I tend to like, and I don't know why I buy them when I see them, but they're books I'll still buy if I see them for like 50 cents, and it's like Silver Surfer 50.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ghost Rider 15, the glow in the dark.
Yeah.
I like those two a lot.
Silver Surfer 50's got the Silver Surfer in the word silver, right?
Yeah, it's embossed with silver, and the Silver Surfer is like an embossed silver.
And it's got Thanos behind
Thanos
it.
Thanos in the back.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Sure, okay. And then I can picture the glow-in-the-dark Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I like that one.
Sure.
You know another type of gimmick that I think is pretty cool is the the gatefold fold-out covers.
Now, those were cool.
Yeah.
Hardcore number one.
Hardcore number one. Jim X-Men Lee. Number
Infinity
one.
War. All six of the covers are like that.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. X-Men number one by Jim Lee is the obvious one. Yeah. Also, X-Men 275, which was one of the first.
Yeah, that's it's a white background with all the X-Men on the cover.
Yeah.
Wearing their blue and yellow outfits.
Yep.
So was it a wraparound fold-out cover?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a cool cover.
It had three panels to it, yeah.
That's Jim Lee again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, someone's got the original art signed by Jim Lee on right here I'm looking at. Wow.
Oh. Another cover gimmick I liked, Continuity Comics used to make a lot of comics with a Tyvek cover.
Who? Tyvek?
Tyvek. Kind of like they put out... I know they used to put out the post office priority mail envelopes made out of this weird...
tag board?
Not really tag board. Kind of a lightweight, almost a cloth fabric.
Whoa.
Yeah, they use it in construction a lot.
Hmm.
And, they put these continuity covers on them, and the continuity art... It's cool, but it's crazy.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Neil Adams stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Tyvek is almost indestructible.
Yeah. Weird.
So are we ready to get to the big kabang at the end here?
Let's do it.
All right. I actually, and this is where I was really faulty, and I didn't quite get my list together. So, favorite covers of all time.
All tempo.
This
can we just go 1-1-1 like that?
Sure.
Okay.
Favorite covers?
Of
I was
all
doing
time.
Iconic covers. Which kind of
See you already gave your favorite list, but Sean called it something else.
No, I've got a different list of favorites all covers.
All covers.
BH1.
Oh yeah, I wanted to go favorite all from all comics our favorite covers of all time.
That's a lot.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one, I think.
Yeah,
this is really tough. Are we ready to jump into that? Do we need a minute to think about this?
Minute to ponder, maybe?
I might have to move a few things around since it's favorite, not iconic.
Sorry.
Call it an audible.
You know, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I can say something I like.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't have that much to, I don't know, to draw on, I guess. Because for me, so much of it is about the story. So really, a lot of times, I'm just like, eh.
Really? You don't have covers where you're like, man, this cover just, it looks awesome.
You know, probably.
I'm sure you do.
I do. More probably is going to be almost in VH1, because that's really what I'm invested in.
That's fine. You know?
Valiant is what I'm invested in. So, yeah, probably that.
It doesn't have to be not Valiant. I mean, Valiant, right. If that's what you like.
Well, that's what I know, pretty much. So, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. I think I got a workable list.
Okay, all right.
I'll start. Okay. Catwoman 51.
Okay.
I think that Adam Hughes cover is striking.
But you said Catwoman 51?
Catwoman 51, yeah. That's the Adam Hughes where she's like crying, or like she has the eyeliner running down her face. She's holding the lost numbers on the police thing.
On like the I've just been arrested card.
Just been arrested one. Yeah. So she looks like she's going to beat everyone up in the whole precinct.
My number five is Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special.
Whoa.
The one where Lobo fights Santa Claus.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, in his defense, in this issue, Santa Claus is really, really tough.
Uh-huh.
He puts the main man through the ringer.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, okay, he's got a big knife in his hand?
Yeah.
Whoa. All right.
So I think I'm going to have to go back to a lot of the things that I really liked as a kid, you know, for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of mine are coming from that era, too.
Not all, but a lot are. All right, so my first one, and this is, I've mentioned it before, is Uncanny X-Men 198. That's always the one that comes to mind. That's one of my favorites.
Is that the Storm cover?
It's the Storm Barry Windsor Smith cover, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I mentioned almost all of mine already, so I'm kind of rehashing myself. I'll put in the, I'll put them together, the Eternal Warrior 6 and 7.
Uh-huh.
The Barry Windsor Smith. I like the dark one slightly better than the one with Gilad, but they're both awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah.
I've got Uncanny X-Men number 309.
Let me check that out.
I don't remember that.
That was the first Marvel comic I ever bought. It had Magneto in the background. And
X, and who's that next to Professor X?
That's Amelia Vaught. They kind of retconned her in as an old girlfriend of Charles's that he felt really guilty about, and she turns up again following Magneto.
Okay.
That's interesting. I look at this and I think, that's not a very good cover. but is it I imagine the sentimentality.
Yeah.
Because now that I think about it, I've got one on my list that when you guys look, you'll probably be like, that's not a very good cover. But
originally, this position in the list for iconic covers was X-Men number 141, the one with Wolverine in front of Kitty Pryde.
Oh, that is super iconic. Yeah,
it's super iconic, and that's from an era when the X-Men were putting out a lot of iconic covers, one right after another.
That is for me the definition of an iconic cover.
But I wrote down a list: 135, 136, 137, 138, 139, 141, 142. All just bam, 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 right there, and they're all really well-known, iconic, well-remembered covers.
Yeah. Which is the one that has Wolverine crucified on the X?
I want to say that's like 230 something or 240 something.
Yeah, it's in the low twos.
Okay, that one stands out.
But yeah, for my personal, you know, when we talk about my favorite covers, there, that one's there. Yeah.
Cool. All right, Sean.
Okay, I'm gonna go with an old school one, Green Lantern 40 from the Silver Age. It's Hal Jordan versus Alan Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Is it okay, yeah, I see ya.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, I really dig that cover. I think that's
now,
just...
Are those really the cool Guardians behind there at the bald heads?
Yes, it is.
Okay, there you go. See, I know something.
And this was, like, the first appearance of Kronos and the whole concept of Infinite Earths. Okay. And I believe it was the first time that Hal Jordan and Alan Scott teamed up. I'm not exactly certain about that, but I think so.
Okay. All right, I'm going to pull out some stuff from my childhood, too, which isn't much because I didn't really grow up reading books, but I did grow up reading some, and these are the ones. I'm going to go next with a Treasury-sized Superman versus the Flash.
Ha, okay, cool.
And they're both, like, running. It was a big Treasury-sized book.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome.
Cool.
I got Grendel Red, White, and Black, number one.
Ooh.
It's one. It's a painted cover Grendel in red, white, and black. He's got the fork.
Got the fork. Yeah, that's a good one.
In front of some smoke. Yeah.
That's a good cover.
I like that red, white, and black. Black, white, and red. I like those. Those are good.
Yeah, they're brilliant expressions of the potential of the art form.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Sean.
All right. My next up, mentioned before, Solar number 10.
Okay.
Love that black slab of goodness. Oh, can't pass it up.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to put an iconic cover up that I believe. Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Oh, yeah, that is iconic. Yeah.
I mean, not only was it a cool story as a kid, and it was a big Treasury-sized book, but there was that whole who's who in there. Because remember, they put all the famous people of the time in the crowd, and then the inside of the cover, it had the numbers saying of who was who and who was who.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
Nice.
Yes. And I think Hobo, forget me my copy I have right now, the one I had when I was a kid, of course, is long gone.
Uh-huh.
So Hobo, nice. Well done.
Very nice.
Very nice.
All right. I got Infinity Gauntlet number 5.
What was...
Thanos versus the Cosmic Beings.
Okay.
Huh. Like Galactus and the Stranger and all that.
Because I would have said Infinity Gauntlet 4 if I had to pick an Infinity Gauntlet cover.
Come and Get Me?
The Come and Get Me cover. Oh, which again is a word balloon cover too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
In this slot on the iconic list, I had Dark Knight Returns number 1. Which is a really iconic cover.
That's very iconic, yeah.
Yeah.
And a very cool cover. Yeah.
All right, Sean, what you got?
All right, my next one here, and this is my just total childhood pick. This is the first issue of Wolverine comics I ever bought. Wolverine 36. It's Wolverine holding this giant machine gun and smoking a cigar. And it's so cool. I think it's by Mark Silvestri.
That's a big gun, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that cover, it's that was the one that made me think, you know what, I should be reading Wolverine comics. Yeah, definitely.
All right, and then this next one I'm probably going to have to say is my favorite cover ever.
Ooh.
It's really my first memory of comics at all, although I know I had some of those record comics. They were on a record player and you could read along the comic book in the record. I know I had some of those. I know. Uh-huh. I had a Spider-Man and a Lizard one for sure. But it's another Treasury size book, really. The only books I read when I was a kid were these Treasury size books. And there's two that are going to be tied, so I'll get my last two here. One of them is a Whitman comic. It's a Treasury size book. Giant Classic King Kong. And it's got King Kong, it's painted, it's a red background, and he's got King Kong on the top of the building with the chick in his hand. He's smashing the airplane, the airplanes are flying around, and he's looking all crazy, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And I think my grandma bought it for me, and of course the one I have now is not that one, but I read that thing, man, like till it fell apart, and I loved the cover of that. Now, is this 5, or do I have one more round? Because I have one more I want to say, my absolute favorite.
I think this is number 5.
Okay, so here's my real favorite. It's going to be in my other Treasury-sized book, because of my memories.
Uh-huh.
It's a Batman book, and it's a Neil Adams cover, and it's the Ra's al Ghul, first Ra's al Ghul story. It's a treasure.
Okay, yeah, I know that cover. That's a good one.
And Robin's dead in the foreground. Batman's like screaming in anguish. Ra's al Ghul is looking like vampire kind of behind him, and Talia's off to the side with all pouty lips looking all hot. And I was like, oh boy, that is incredible. And the very first page when you open the book, it shows Robin getting shot twice in the belly. And it's this incredible Batman story of Ra's al Ghul. And that is my, like, if I could have any, like, original art, I don't know how much it's worth, but that'd be the one I would take right there.
That's got to be worth millions. Tons.
Yeah.
Tons.
It's Neil Adams. It's incredible. I don't know if you guys ever seen it before. You can probably Google it. But it's awesome.
Uh-huh.
I'll see if I can upload a picture to OTV listeners so they can see what I'm talking about.
That's pretty cool.
I've mentioned it already, but Secret Defenders number 12. It's the sparkly Thanos cover.
Right.
Although, I got to get, since Elvin got an extra.
You know what, Chico, really quickly. Hey, OTV listeners, if you Google Batman C-51, Google Images, it's the first thing that comes up. You can see it. So it's Batman C-51. You want to see it. All right, go ahead. Go, Chico.
Godzilla versus Charles Barkley.
Oh.
that's a classic cover right there.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Charles Barkley schooled Godzilla, man.
Well, yeah.
Charles Barkley, awesome. Barkley never even won a ring. Didn't even win a ring, but still schooled Godzilla.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
I don't care how many rings LeBron gets between now and 2050, he never schooled Godzilla.
That's right.
Okay, so for my last one, I'm going to go with another old school book from my childhood.
Can I guess what it is?
You can, yeah.
I'm going to go with the G.I. Joe cover.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess.
Wow, okay, all right. So far you've nailed it. So now you got to go with issue number. So,
I'm trying to remember. You said it before.
I'll give you a hint.
28.
I'll give you a hint. It's an issue that I bought as it was coming
36.
Out.
You bought it at the Thrifties where you got ice cream with your family and you get them off the spinner rack.
Though the
I was going to say 37. Was it 37?
No, that was way before my time. That was like 5 years before I was reading them.
All right.
4 or 5 years.
98.
No and no.
Hmm.
I don't know.
I give up.
G.I. Joe 100.
The Cobra Commander cover.
Cobra Commander standing in all his glory saying, I'm back.
Yeah. I actually knew that cover without you telling me what it was. Actually, that's one of the ones I do know.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
That's a good cover.
Yeah.
So you bought that right off the shelf.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep. Yeah, I started buying G.I. Joe around issue 85.
So let me ask you, does it have the barcode or the Spider-Man face in the box?
I have no idea. No idea. Because I don't remember if I had started buying them at the comic book shop by then.
Okay.
Barcode would be off the spinner rack and Spider-Man would be out of the comic shop, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Or maybe it's the other way. I don't remember how it works. Anyway, okay, all right. So we got through covers. Anything else to say about covers before we wrap up this cover talk?
Covers are nice. I like what's inside the best.
Covers are a wonderful hors d'oeuvre to the main course.
There you go.
Covers are a viable option if your band doesn't have any good original material.
That too.
I guess I never want the cover to be the best thing about the book.
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, sometimes it happens.
It does happen sometimes, yeah.
All right, well, this has been a long episode, and there was some other stuff we were planning on getting to, just like we got a few of you writing in of your best of 2012, and we have a Cherimoya report.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be good. Yeah, we've got a Cherimoya report.
We have time for a Cherimoya report.
Okay, you want to do the – okay, because what we got here, it's it's actually a voicemail.
Let's do it.
Of somebody trying a Cherimoya live. Having never tried it before. So
we got to play this, man.
Okay, all right. Well, then give me a second to get this all dialed in.
Hey, guys. Dr. Steep here. Sent a couple emails in, and I sent you a voicemail because a couple days ago I was just being goofy and got on eBay and searched for Cherimoya. By the way, this voicemail is for you, Elvin. And I found a Cherimoya on eBay. So I felt like, hey, what the heck, I'll send this to Valiant. I'm holding the chair in my hand. It seems kind of interesting color. It's really soft. Okay. It's really, kind of sweet. It's got a, kind of a tangy citrus taste to it. It's really weird. Ah. 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 That just, that just got really bitter. Oh, my tongue. Oh, guys. So gross. I don't understand how the blind eat these. Well, I guess they don't eat them. Why do they worship these, this junk? Gross. It's like orange on the inside. That is so weird. Oh, it's gross. Ugh. Okay. Well, Alvin, be my guest if you want to try to eat one of these things, but I, on the other hand, would not recommend it. So, well, guys, I love the podcast. Can't wait for Jenny to come back, and you guys are awesome. Feel my power!
Who's that guy?
I think you got a fan, LV.
I think so. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Who? What did he say his name was?
I'm not sure. He said it's like Dr. something.
Dr. something?
I didn't quite make it out.
Yeah, at the very beginning, it was a little garbled.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear you. So, this guy bought something on eBay and ate it.
Live on for us.
That's awesome.
I love this guy.
This is so cool. Isn't that great?
I need to know who this guy is. So, whoever you are, Charmoya
Man. Like a gold podcast or something.
We do. Oh, we need to give him some sort of something.
Yeah.
Shoot us an email. And
hey. I got something for him. Yeah, tell him, Sean. Send us an email. What your name and address is. I'll send you something. I got something
for him. Well, we'll also send you a special gold edition of this very own of this podcast.
Ooh, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very rare. Only one gold edition of a podcast has ever been given out so far. So this would be the second gold edition to ever be given out.
But if we get his address, I will send him something. I got something for him.
Awesome. Cool. Shoot us an email, man.
I'm curious what other things we can talk people into eating. Can we get some guy to eat like a whole stick of butter or something?
Gross. That's gross.
Come on. With no power comes terrible responsibility.
That's right.
You know, it's
get like Mark to Rose to call up the voicemail and eat a stick of butter.
Oh, no.
Please, nobody eat a stick of butter, please.
Yeah, I don't want to get
do it.
No. Now, if they deep fried it with some powdered sugar, then maybe.
Okay.
But no one eat a stick of butter. See, the cherimoya worked because it was within context.
Yes.
So anything within context, we could. I think it's fair to ask.
What we really need. We need like V. Diddy and Josh Dysart and Dwayne Straczynski and Fred Van Lente, and all these guys write about more food in the
That's
comments.
Right.
Weird,
That's right.
Obscure food.
And then we get OTV listeners to sample it live on OTV for us.
Yeah. Dustin Zordon, Patrick Zercher, you too. Please,
tell you what,
weird food. Sean, that's what we need.
You and I, we're going to try a cherimoya in Arizona. I'm on the hunt for a cherimoya in Arizona, Sean. We're going to try one, and we're going to record it live ourselves.
We'll see if we can do this.
It's New Orleans. Make him eat like a Nutria po' boy.
Awesome.
I love that. Seriously, hey, send your email in, bro, or send your address, and I'll hook you up with something.
Sweet. That's awesome. Cool. Let's wrap up this episode.
Let's do it.
If you want to poison yourself on the air, just send in your voicemails to the voicemail number. That number is
2708.
Ninjack.
That's number is
2708.
Ninja.
All right. Call with your voicemail needs. And you know all the rest. Just find us wherever. So hope you like this cover discussion, even if it was just kind of a surface level. Conversation. Never mind. So for
pretty,
only
pretty,
the Valiant.
Fun.
I know. It was terrible. For only the Valiant, I am Sean.
I'm Chiclo.
Sylvine, everybody. And Jonesy, I miss you, buddy. Feel my power.
Just fine because it's been.
Okay, I've busted out the Carhartt a couple times. I got a nice Carhartt jacket.
Ah, yeah, those are nice.
Yeah. Carhartt
jacket. Yeah.
Don't know what that is.
Carhartt's like it's kind of like work clothes.
Yeah, it's a chore coat for, you know, something you'd wear working cattle in the winter.
It'd be like Dickies or Ben Davis, but probably nicer and heavier.
Kind of like Dickie style, huh? All right, cool.
Yeah.
Carhartt. All right, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I love learning new things from the OTV experience.
That's right.
There it is.
Okay, so let's get into it.
Do it.